This episode of Football 301, Connor Rogers from NBC and the NFL Stock Exchange joins me to get into running back and tight end prospects. We start at the top with the big names and then get on from there. We get to day two, guys, get to sneaky day three, guys. We like some dark horses that we like. Really great conversation with Connor. Also start the show with a little news roundup. We got Jalen Waddle traded to the Broncos. Justin Fields traded to the Chiefs. We got Kyler Viking thoughts. Also, Hollywood Brown to the Eagles. Some Eagles roundup news. A little solo segment there. Very fun show, though, with Connor. See you guys in a sec. Hello, and welcome back to Football 301. Great show for you today. At the start of the show, we're going to start with a little news that... You know, it happened. We got a Jalen Waddle trade to the Broncos, Justin Fields trade to the Chiefs, Kyler and the Vikings finally joined up in an unholy union that I cannot wait to talk about and dive into. First, today, that happened just before the show, Jalen Waddle traded to the Broncos. There was some smoke. Some people thought maybe Deebo Samuel would be the fire to that smoke, but it's Jalen Waddle, who I actually think is a phenomenal fit for the Broncos right now because... they need speed. They have a lot of size at receiver. That's not by accident. That's what Sean Payton likes at receiver. And if you ever hear him talk about scouting skill positions and scouting receivers, he prefers size. And he says, if you're going to be a smaller guy, which in NFL terms is typically sub 195, you better be special. Special as in a special with the ball in your hands or a special mover. Jalen Waddle is a special mover. He is. This is true world-class speed. An effective down the field guy, an effective yak guy, has not maybe been as productive as kind of that, you know, greatest show on turf Dolphins, you know, speed offense kind of tapered off at the end there. But at the very least, at the very, very least, a high end two, and also just complements the guys that they already have right now. Like Cortland Sutton is a perfect complement for Jalen Waddle. So is either guy a perfect number one? No, but as a 1B or a 2A, however you want to put it, great. And then they also have, you know, Pat Bryant, who I really like, can do some power slot stuff, can unlock Waddle to be off the ball. That's what's nice too, is that Waddle has to be, doesn't have to be, but you preferably have him on the move or off the ball. Stack alignments, a Z, a slot. They have a plethora of guys that can play on the ball. So don't like Waddle for everybody, but love him for the Broncos. And if Bo Nix is kind of going to be at times, you know, check the ball down, attack underneath, maybe get a guy that's, you know, Mims is kind of their one guy that can create a ton of yak. Well, now they got another guy that can create a ton of yak on those underneath stuff, the swing screens they run, the checkdowns underneath, the ISO routes that they run. So, yeah, I like this. And I get it. You're giving up a first rounder, but it's pick 30. This is a weak class. And honestly, the Broncos have been one of the tougher teams for me to even mock draft when Charles and I do our mock drafts, because I'm like, they can go defense, I guess. Are they going to re-up their O-line? But the O-lineman might be gone by now. They can maybe go receiver, but our last mock, we had C.J. Allen from Georgia, the linebacker, going there before they traded this pick, obviously. But they... I was like, I know they need a skill guy. They need speed. But at that time, it was like Mekhi Lemon. Not sure if Sean Payton would be about a slot-only guy. Casey Concepcion. And again, Charles and I are a little lower on Lemon than the consensus. Casey Concepcion got some interesting. Not the biggest guy again. So it's like with Marvin Mims, is that a hat on a hat kind of a thing? So Waddle is a way different player. And I get it. You're giving up a quote-unquote first rounder, but it's pick 30. They swap force. I think a third was thrown in there as well. So, I wonder what A.J. Brown's price is now. But this is a good player, even if it is a high end two. And yes, it's a first rounder. Waddle is now, a lot of draft capital has been used on Jalen Waddle when he came into the league and then now. But I understand this for the Broncos that are pushing it. Again, the AFC is so wide open and the Broncos have a good roster still. They're probably going to take a little step back with some regression in some areas. It's still a good team with a good roster on both sides of the ball. This is a move I understand of putting them over the top. And at their draft selection spot, I understand kind of parting with pick 30 there. So I like this from the Broncos end. They got to push it. AFC is wide open. AFC West, the Chiefs are reloading. I'll get into them trading for Justin Fields in a sec. The Chargers should be good. Got to see how their draft kind of plays out to maybe feel even better about them. The Ravens are going to be good, but they're still figuring some of the stuff out too. The Bills, same stuff. So it's a wide open AFC. Jags, Texans, so totally get this. Can put them over the top. The Dolphins side of this, I get it. And I get that they're totally rebuilding. tanking, if you want to say it that way. There is a prize in next year's draft class if he comes out. And I really do think this is Arch Manning. I think there's some interesting auxiliary receiver, secondary quarterbacks that they can maybe be looking at for next year as well. Lenore Sellers, Dante Moore. There's a few other names out there, but those are ones that come to mind right now. Nothing's a sure thing, but they signed Malik Willis. And I tweeted this. It just seems there's something a little off. I actually didn't know this would blow up as much as it did, if I'm being honest, if anyone saw how much engagement that got. But where I understand why they signed Willis, where it's like, we need a quarterback to start for us. But then every move around it has been like, we're tanking. We're totally, this is it. We're cutting Chubb. We're moving this. We're training this guy. Or this is it. We're out of here. Kind of with Willis, it's like, did you know that, Malik? I think he did. He seems like a great guy. They probably communicated this. But it seems tough if you're giving Malik Willis an extended tryout, which is this year is, to see if he can be a dude, which I understand throwing that dart. Because if you get a dude, even if it's at low $20 million a year, that's a huge discount if the guy is quarterback 18 or better. But you're not really giving him the surroundings to maybe fairly assess him. So he went from a very incubated area ecosystem in the Packers with their offensive system, their weapons, their play calling. Going now to this, which if you're looking at the Dolphins starting receivers, and now the draft has not happened. I understand now they have two first round picks, but right now the starting receivers are Jalen Tolbert, who can never get on the field with the Cowboys, Tutu Atwell, who if anyone's heard me in the last 4 or 5 years knows what I think of Tutu Atwell. Like even as a design shot play guy isn't great at that because he's a buck 50. I do like Malik Washington, but being realistic, Malik Washington's like a three. Those are the receivers. They have Greg Dulcich at tight end. They let Julian Hill go, which I don't, that, what are you self-scouting if you're letting Julian Hill go? The Patriots swooped him up, which apparently more people like Julian Hill than just Nate Tice, but I actually made me feel a little bit better because I think Julian Hill has got some chops as a Y. But this is a team to me that's clearly reloading. I mean, you look at their defense, they got some defensive front guys, but back seven, they need corners. Yes, they got now a couple first-round picks. I think they go corner in the first round. I would. And I think they line up perfectly to take a corner. But I don't know. They need a lot. This is rebuilding. And if you do hit on Willis and he is the guy, by the time this team is built, which at least will take 2 years, then you're kind of losing the advantage of a contract with him because it's a 3-year deal. So I don't know. I get why the Dolphins are kind of pulling the plug on a lot of stuff, but the Malik Willis thing was just a little strange to me because even if he's decent enough and say you win 4 or 5 games, which it was tough, you do win 4 or 5 or win more than that, you're out of the pick for a quarterback. Like teams that are going to be picking high, they do have those picks. They're not moving it, especially if there's more than Arch, if there's actually 2 or 3 guys. Right now, I can kind of say like 2.5 guys, maybe 3. I got plenty of time before I'm doing my too early big board, so just wait for that. But get this for the Broncos. Dolphins just had some questions with the Willis timing, even if I understand they're trying to give him an extended tryout. This is not really the circumstances for an extended tryout because Willis is still projecty and just kind of feels off. I'd rather them traded for Davis Mills or something like that. Maybe they didn't want to trade draft capital. Maybe Kirk Cousins didn't want to come in. For Malik Willis, it's like, why don't you go to Pittsburgh maybe? I understand why not going to Arizona, but this is a full rebuild. And by the time it actually is built, they might move on to a quarterback next year or they might move on after that. So I don't know. It just a little, the Willis thing just doesn't time up for me as well, even if it's just understandable, some of the arguments for it. So just had to kind of get out that, but I understand what the Broncos are doing. They're going to go corner, probably receiver in the first round. That's how I would do it. And they kind of line up very nicely in those two spots. Now mention the Chiefs traded for Justin Fields. For a 6th rounder in next year's draft, or is this year's draft? 6th rounder. I'll just say for the next draft. There we go. Cover it. Fields experiment in Pittsburgh didn't work great. Gets benched for Russ. Russell Wilson goes to the Jets, kind of on the Malik Willis kind of timeline, but that, you know, got him to pick 2 before he got hurt, and they're playing Brady Cook by the end of the year. Justin Fields is Justin Fields. He does not get rid of the ball quick. He's extremely explosive as a runner. It can throw a deep ball pretty well, but does not get the ball out quick, which is a little different than what the Chiefs and Andy Reid do, which is a very traditional West Coast, which also can, we'll have plenty of time talking about Jackson Dart and Matt Nagy. That might be a further discussion on that, but can create, if you're not having Mahomes maybe for the first month of the season, he's saying he's going to be there week 1, or at least that's what some of the rumors and reporting has been. But if you need a guy that can stopgap for a month, let's get a guy that can run around a little bit. I understand the argument for that. We get Fields and is maybe his best ecosystem that he's ever had. The Bears never were this. Steelers in his 1 year was tumultuous. Jets last year were a train wreck. So maybe that will help him a little bit to maybe kind of capitalize on his talents. He's going to have some exciting moments. I'm kind of very curious what kind of packages Andy Reid's going to cook up for him. He just turned 27. Maybe there's a little bit more here. Maybe they show so much more with Fields than anyone has before. But he's a limited quarterback in a lot of senses, but is an exciting quarterback that can maybe win you a game if you're playing some kind of like a high, you know, it's going to be a lot of run of the ball. And they're going to have an explosive backfield with him and Walker before Mahomes comes back. So you kind of, that's what you want as a backup, a guy that you can throw in and can run around and maybe win you a game and get you through a couple bad stretches, you know, tough spots. And that's kind of what they're going to start the year in possibly. So I understand this. For the Chiefs, they needed this kind of stopgap. Matt Harmon floated maybe trading for Anthony Richardson to be the stopgap. Kind of same type of thinking. Really, that's I totally understand this. So yeah, I think it's fun. I'm curious. This is actually one I'm like, I want to see a month of Justin Fields with Andy Reid and just see what happens. I mean, that offensive line I still think is going to be good. So yeah, kind of curious where they go with this. Next one, I'll go with the quick one. Hollywood Brown to the Eagles. Eagles just keep showing up these 1 year deals. They also signed Arnold Ebiketie from the Falcons, who I like that. I like that signing, but a bunch of 1 year deals for the Eagles. That's where they're at as a team and team building. The receiver three doesn't catch the ball in the Eagles offense. It's going to be receiver one, receiver two, and they brought back Dallas Goedert. Like that's where the targets go. Receiver three is a sacrificial player in this offense, just how Hurts operates, how the whole thing operates. So probably best for Brown, because then you can just be a deep speed guy, clear up speed for everybody else on underneath in the intermediate. You don't want him in a huge role, but you know, that's kind of just a partial role player. I like that. They also, you know, the Reek Wallen, which I touched on last week. I like that signing. They really need a CB2. He's kind of a perfect for that. I like the Johnny Munt signing. Can be a dirty work tight end. I can't believe they brought Grant Calcaterra back. That just blows my mind. But Dallas Goedert doesn't really want to do any dirty work blocking, so Johnny Munt can do that. So these 1 year deals for the Eagles are kind of like him as far as just role player roles. The Tariq Woolen, though, I did like. Had that special up to $50 million language bill, which I think is pretty funny. Last but not least, Kyler Murray is now a Viking. Which, you know, it's been kind of in the news for a while, kind of project that way. I've had thoughts on this. I've touched on it in various ways on various shows. If you can get Kyler Murray, who again, the last 3 years in what has been what people consider a joke, I know maybe not for me, but a rough situation in the desert in Arizona, coming back from injury in 2023, has a year 2024, which probably has most consistent play at quarterback in a real pro style system. So by what I mean pro style, obviously NFL, but not Cliff Kingsbury offense. And then last year, season from hell, had moments early in the year. Then I could tell just lack trust in the offensive line, lack trust in the offense, was bailing out backwards, was not throwing stuff over the middle at all. He got coaxed into doing that more in 2024, but not so much in 2025. So Kyler to me is, I understand why his stock is low. I understand the Call of Duty memes, which I think are blown out of proportion. I understand that he might be not the ideal quarterback personality that everybody wants. Having said that, he is still freaking talented. And in those last 3 years that I just painted out, which was not the best ball for the Cardinals, not the best situation for him, he was still quarterback 14 in EPA and quarterback 16 in success rate. And if the Vikings get quarterback 14 to 16, I would say even better than quarterback 20. This is so much better team than I think people realize, even if they have taken a slight step back with some of their other roster guys or guys on the roster, because they were not even just quarterback 32 last year, like quarterback 40 last year. You had Carson Wentz. You had J.J. McCarthy. I mean, that stuff was a train wreck for weeks, and they're still playing competitive ball, especially at the end of the season. And Kyler, it's a one-year deal. And again, if he's better than quarterback 18, quarterback 20, if he's quarterback 16, quarterback 14, which was Darnold basically was in his year with the Vikings, that is one of the best values in the entire league. We talk about rookie quarterback contracts. Well, if he's just average, and look what else we can do. Well, that's the same thing here with a guy that has touched top 10 play. I'm not saying he's a top 10 quarterback, but in how I tier guys, he's a tier 3 guy to me. There's a bunch of tier 3 guys in the league right now, but holy crap, getting him for this contract, 20, I mean, let's say 10, 12, $15 million left than Malik Willis. I mean, I would much rather take Kyler. And again, I don't think he is a perfect player. He went back into his bad habits last year while we were going with the quote unquote quarterback guy, Kevin O'Connell, who's going to have a chip on his shoulder to go like, hey, I can coach these freaking guys up. Because I understand like some of the stuff he's going through with McCarthy and what's going on with that here or with that team right now. So I think there's two guys and a head coach and a quarterback with chips on their shoulders. I think he's a better scheme fit than he's getting credit for right now. I think Kyler's actually not that bad from under center. I think he's actually fairly comfortable turning his back on play action stuff. I think KOC actually merged a lot of stuff with Darnold and getting him more in the gun on some stuff where they still were under center at one of the higher rates, but they were able to merge some of the gun stuff that maybe Darnold was a little more comfortable with, where I think Kyler is going to be a better fit for that than people realize. I think his QB run ability would be something KOC can touch on a little bit. Did it a little bit with Darnold. He did it with McCarthy last year, and Kyler is a much better runner than McCarthy. And I think he throws a beautiful deep ball. I've seen the stats. He's one of the worst deep ball throws the last 4 years. Who is he throwing deep balls to? They traded for Hollywood Brown. Remember that terrible trade that they made for Hollywood Brown? Speaking of him, they had the corpse of DeAndre Hopkins, who couldn't really run past 10, 15 yards. They had who else they had? They had AJ. Why am I blanking on his name? AJ wide receiver. AJ Green, not AJ Brown. AJ Green, different color. We're playing a game of Clue here. They had, Smurfs. I would say at receiver. It was like the 1980s Washington team at receivers at one point. None of these guys are great deep ball guys. Even a guy like, look at their team last year. Like Michael Wilson is good, but he's a burly guy. Marvin Harrison's not a deep ball guy. Now you get Justin Jefferson, who's phenomenal on deep balls. Jordan Addison, depending on how the off-field stuff is, but he's great vertically. That's so much better than what he's been working with. And I think that Kyler on those overs and those posts, that is what he's going to be able to throw much better than people are remembering. Because I think this offense he played in the last couple of years, he was checking down a lot of stuff. He was throwing a lot of stuff underneath Trey McBride, which is still going to be a part of it. But I think that deep ball that he was so good at early in his career, he's going to be able to touch into that a little bit more again. And I think that's going to open up so much in this offense and open up the run game, even if the run game might, they still have some stuff in the running back room that to figure out. I mean, they're bringing back guys, Aaron Jones, whatever, but the running back we'll figure out the O-line stuff. I don't know. I like this. And I think the value for this is phenomenal. So yeah, I don't know. I see some people knocking this and saying Kyler sucks and they'll never win a game with Kyler. He's not a winner. And I just think that's kind of results-based thinking or results-based analysis. I think Kyler's got more synergy with this offense than I think people are realizing. I think KOC is going to be really good for him. And I'm excited to see maybe two guys with chips on their shoulders maybe attack this year and really trying to do some cool stuff. So yeah, more than just curiosity, I think this will be a little bit better than people are realizing. So, and a great value as well. All right. Well, that's rounding up the news. A little solo news segment there. I'm going to take our first break and then come back with Mr. Connor Rogers to get into some running back prospects. See you guys in a second. I am joined by a very special guest from NBC. Oh my God. How many titles do you have? From NBC, host of the enough. NFL Stock that's Exchange. Enough. I could just keep going and going, but we're going to go over some running backs and tight ends today with my very special guest, Connor Rogers. How you doing today, Connor?
Nate, I'm good, man. I'm excited for this. These are some good groups to really, really dig through, especially with you. We're going to have a lot of fun.
It's going to be a great one. Yeah, both start with a bullet at number one, but that's right where the fun begets when we get into two through X, however many we're going to talk about today. But it's going to be fun. This is the first show of our position preview series, running backs, tight ends. Today, we'll hit all the good ones, quarterbacks, O-line with my dad. We got defensive line, all that good stuff, DBs, receivers with Matt Harmon. We're bringing in the big guns. But Connor was lucky enough to join me. I'm lucky enough that you joined me. But we're going to get into the running backs right away here. Running backs, in your top 100, or really top 50, I'll let you kind of maybe state maybe the guys that you have would consider maybe day one or day two guys, and then we can go on from there. But obviously, I'm going to guess Jeremiah Love, consensus unanimous running back one. But maybe after that, who are right now on March 17th, when we're recording this, how do you stack these guys up? Or you see it maybe top 100, round three or above guys?
Right. So Love is kind of that bingo space for everybody. Anybody that doesn't have Love number one, I mean, listen, to each their own. I love unique draft rankings, but like it would surprise me if we have some people that don't think he's the best back in this class. And then, you know, like you said, you kind of look at it and everybody has a different view of it. There's two guys in that next tier for me that are very, very different, with Jadarian Price, ironically Love's teammate at Notre Dame. There is a ceiling there that I think some evaluators will be particularly excited about. I mean, you could see the big playability. You can see the fact that he's someone that I think there's an untapped nature in the pass game, because he's willing to protect. Like, he will drop his hips and be physical and try to stay square. They just don't throw him the ball a lot because they have Jeremiah Love. So they also have Malachi Fields and Eli Raritan, who we're going to talk about at some point. So when you look at it from that perspective, I think teams want to know, you know, what is Price's ceiling in the pass game? I thought an outside zone, he just had special kind of breakaway stuff at times. But then the other guy in the tier, and I know not everybody has him here, I think Jonah Coleman is in this tier as well, more as the floor. Jonah is that bowling ball, fire hydrant, whatever you want to call it, kind of tree stump, 5'9". You know, it's interesting. I had Jonah Coleman at Big Ten Media Days almost 2 years ago, and then I had him again at the Combine this year. And he's gotten a little lighter. It felt like there was a time where he was just 230 pounds, and it felt like, you know, 20 pounds of muscle and a 10-pound sack kind of build. He's lost a little bit. He's trimmed a little bit, but he's still like a real 220, where he could just drop his pads and run through you. I think he's a better pass catcher than he gets credit for. He's got good feet at his weight. He can really, really dance in a phone booth to make you miss. So these are him and Price are the other two guys that I think will go or should go in the top 50. When you expand it to the top 100, this is not a big group, Nate. I mean, I like Emmett Johnson. I think Emmett Johnson has really unique on-field agility. I think he runs a bigger route tree than a lot of your typical college backs. So he's somebody to me that I think should be a no-brainer in the top 100. And then the guys people are going to decipher through, like, where does Mike Washington Jr. go? How about the Penn State guys and Catron Allen and Nick Singleton, Demond Claiborne, Adam Randall from Clemson? So I don't think this is a deep running back class for top 100 picks. I'm curious kind of if you agree with that.
I totally agree. Even doing a top 50, Price barely snuck in for me.
Right.
And that's not a knock on him, but it's just, you know, just how I kind of grade running backs. I would like just a little bit more to maybe bump him up higher. But I agree with you with Coleman. I consider them in the same tier. Like if I were to do a top 75, Coleman would have made that easily. You know, and I think, but I consider those two in the same tier. I was hoping to have you on to talk me out of Coleman, because this is the type of running back that I am a sucker for every single year. I call it, it's the Devin Neal. Like Devin Neal last year from Kansas was this version of this. I think Coleman's a little bit better than that. But just that squatty, good vision, has burst, but maybe not that long speed home run hitter, but man, just gets on base. That's how I just look at it. Just strong runner. I think, yeah, just get good vision. And honestly, there's a couple times in the red zone where he got to the edge and outran guys to the corner. So it's enough burst and short area speed that, yeah, he might not be that 4.4 guy, but I don't think he's a total plotter. But man, the vision he has, it's just, these are the guys that to me, you mentioned the floor. It's like, these guys are always just effective. Is he a star? I don't know. But I do think this guy, it's like, he can be at least a good two at the very least, because also he's great in pass protection. I don't know. These all do it. Yeah, these do it all guys that can do everything at least well. And I think run between the tackles, and, you know, it's a much more gap, you know, duo league where you have to read those double teams. And I think he's very good at that. So I'm always just a sucker for this. And we talked right before the show, and I go back and forth just like you between Coleman and Price, because I do like Price too. You know, I actually thought what was surprising with Price, he had good speed at 10 yards. His size, I thought he would be a little bigger. And I think maybe that's right. What's like his weigh in, almost like maybe it was just my narrative in my head that I was like, oh, this guy's 212. And it was like 203. And I'm like,
it's his biceps and shoulders.
Yeah, because he's got the rocked up
giant biceps and shoulders, but he's not the heaviest back. It is incredibly perplexing.
It is, and it's almost like because he wasn't that almost hurt him in my brain. Like if he was too, I know that sounds so arbitrary and everything, but really just how his style is, it's almost that's what I want to see out of him. I liked his vision. I think I like the way I kind of described it. I think tempoing his runs is his strong suit. Like he just really knows how to find that crease. And really this was just a random quirk. But you know, next gen stats, you can look at the tracking for the miles per hour, not just some drills, but routes. He had some of the fastest routes. Like his wheel route was the second fastest top speed. His Texas route, which is an angle route, so you fake a flat and then come back in, a choice route, was the third fastest. And that kind of tracks. Like he can just get to that first, second year, third grade real quick, but then maybe just not have that high end stuff at the end, or just that one kind of quality maybe missing. Also has returnability, which matters now. Again, as returns have become more valuable. But Mike Washington, kind of, I think we view him the same. I want to like him. I want to love him, but it's just this style that's so downhill. So Mike Washington from Arkansas, speed score wonder, good size, just downhill in a hurry, but just can never quite make that safety miss unless he like just runs past him. So I couldn't really get over the top. So like, where kind of how do you have him gauge? Like kind of more of a third round type or a third, fourth round type?
Kind of that third to fourth round range, honestly, with him. Yeah, it's one of those ones where, you know, he blew up because of the combine and people were like, wow, like, who is this? And he has everything that, you know, sleeper running backs, people fall in love with, the size, the speed, you know, pretty well traveled guy. He's played at Buffalo and New Mexico State before Arkansas. So he's been around for quite a bit right now. I think with him, what was ironic about the 40, you know, unless it was just one of those first film watches that I read wrong, I liked his initial burst almost better than his breakaway speed, where I'd see him get the ball and I'm like, for a big guy, his takeoff is pretty good. But when it's time, like you just said, to turn a play from 10 to 30 plus, that wasn't always there for me. And I think you alluded to this at the end there. He's just not a very creative runner. Honestly, like, and the data supports that too. I mean, his missed tackles force per attempt was 0.2. That's 44th percentile. So it's not, you know, when you're outside of the top 50th percentile in college, you're probably not going to be an overly creative runner at the next level. So you're going to rely more on the blocking scheme in front of you. But I like the long strides. He can run through contact. I think the footwork was better than I expected, considering how big he is. And I do like that initial explosiveness. But I think going back to our ranges, because we're saying third or fourth round, like what separates running backs, you know, going in the top 50 is that they probably have a skill set that is just more difficult to find. I don't think he has that skill set that is typically difficult to find. What probably helps him is you look at somebody like Mark Fletcher from Miami deciding not to enter this draft. Like guys like that, where it's like, oh, you know, there's usually a handful of guys like this. In this year's class, there's actually not a ton of guys like this that maybe boosted his stock around or so.
You remember, this might not be a perfect company. Remember Damian Williams, who's with the Chiefs? Yeah. For a minute, that's kind of who he reminds me of running wise.
That's a good, like, they run the same style.
Yeah. Size. And like, I've never, like, downhill can, I think when you first hear downhill, you just think a bullway that's running through a whole bunch of guys. But he is the most downhill runner in the sense that it's like, it's all this build up, ramp up speed. And if he doesn't get by the safety, nothing's happening. But if he has the angle and the safety, it's a home run. It's great. It's just that, downhill is the way to describe him. But that Damian Williams is who his running style reminds me of. Same size, had good speed, never was super productive. But that's who the name that just kind of kept coming to mind to me. Go on. Let's talk about the Penn State guys. I personally have Catron Allen above Singleton.
Me too.
Okay. I think Allen, another guy I'm a sucker for. Another guy that gets on base, but just doesn't have that final home run ability unless he has space. Almost as a runner, the guy he reminds me of is Rashad White in the weirdest way. No, Rashad White can, I'm like, we'll get to that 4 or 5 yards, but can't make that last guy miss ever. That's Catron Allen. And it's like, if he could make that last guy miss, it's actually a similar discussion we just had with Washington, but it's like, man, I really like him from 0 to 5 yards. But anything past that, I lose steam of how much I like him. But the two Penn State guys, how'd you stack them up? You said you had them the same way, but what'd you think of Catron Allen and Nicholas Singleton?
Yeah, and they're so different, right? When you look at Catron Allen, who prefers to go by his nickname of Fat Man, which is very funny to me. He like embraces this nickname, which I think is just absolutely perfect. Okay. He's a very,
as opposed to Little Boy.
Interesting. Right. Yeah. Running backs are interesting because they their personalities go one of two ways, as in, like, one way is that they don't have one, or number two, they're the most bubbly people you will ever speak to across NFL players. And Ka'Tron Allen definitely fits the latter. He's a very fun guy. You know, having the Big Ten this year for NBC, watching a lot more Penn State than I would ever expect to, when they transitioned to Ka'Tron Allen at some point later into the year, their run game was just more consistent. And I think it just alludes back to what you're pointing at. I kind of call running backs like this Honda Civic backs. Like, you could put a lot of mileage on them. They're not going to go 0 to 120. It's not always going to look, you know, this aesthetically pleasing, but man, it gets the job done at the NFL level. And
starts rattling Allen, when you're on the highway.
Yeah, that's okay. Like, we're going to get there. No worries. This happens. I'm used to it. Ka'Tron Allen, man, he's got a wide upper body, kind of bounces through contact. When he gets that second level momentum, he dumps defenders to the ground. He has no problem just absolutely bulldozing defenders. I think he's someone that, you know, when he's the guy that can turn 2 yards into six pretty consistently, and that is a special, that's a really, really important trait at the NFL level of running. While you look at Singleton, I think that he's someone where we were always kind of waiting for him to be more. And I don't know if that's unfair to Nick Singleton, but you just look at he's been hurt. He's big. He's got straight line explosiveness. I mean, in 2024, he had 32 explosive runs on just 174 attempts. I mean, those 10 plus yard runs. He's got leg drive through the interior lanes, but the production fell off a cliff this year. He's someone that there's not short area wiggle. He's just not going to make somebody miss. He's just going to have to kind of get downhill. If we go back to Mike Washington, Singleton's not a creative runner at all. You want him in space. You really are probably going to try to get the most out of him on third downs because he can pass protect a little bit, and you get him in space to catch the ball and try to get that explosiveness going. That's what stands out to me with him, you know. So I think Ka'Tron Allen is somebody you can lean on more in between the tackles and the run game, where Singleton is probably going to be built for a third down role at the NFL level.
He's very designery. And maybe that's just the Penn State offense being so designery, but that, like you said, it just never took that next step as a back. Feel like a natural running back. He feels like an athlete playing running back, you know, that's kind of what he is. I mean, I think even his background. And I know it was because he's been relevant for so long. Huge recruit, played as a freshman, always had moments, but it just, I don't know. Every time I watched him, I was waiting for him. Even coming into this year, people are like, he's battling love for running back one. I was like, oh no, they're about four tiers apart. And that was even before the season, because I just never saw him like get running back. And whether that's because of Penn State's very designery offense, he never was able to kind of move up and really get that kind of polish. But yeah, he's just always has left me wanting more. Like, he has just been like, where I can talk myself into Allen and I can see a role for Allen, Singleton, I'm just kind of like, yeah, okay, cool. It's cool in college when you can design this stuff, but NFL is more just about like versatility and how many plays you can impact, how many roles you can fill. Who's going to be patient enough for a designer running back? You know what I mean? Like, it's just kind of that down to down effectiveness. Yeah. And I think you see it the same way.
I don't think he has feel in zone, which is, I know it's harsh, but that's kind of a natural when you've played that much college football. Like, if you're like, you know, if we talked about like an Adam Randall who moved from wide receiver to running back out of nowhere, okay, that's a little different. But when you've been a running back at Penn State getting a lot of touches for a couple years now, I just could never put him, like, give him a zone carry at the NFL. It feels so harsh to say, but he's got no feel for that at all, where I just wonder what an NFL team ultimately is going to do with him, with that being a problem.
He seems like a guy in high school that got a lot of toss plays and a lot of, toss to the right, toss to the left, and he just got everything was a kick return for him. Like, that's what it seems like to me. It doesn't seem like, you watch Bijan Robinson's high school highlights and he's running everything. You know, I know that's not fair to compare one of the best, but it's just like, that's what he just feels like. It's like more just, again, like an athlete. So we're speaking the same language on him. I think of him as a clear day three guy. I get if you want to take a splash and we have other guys that can take touches and maybe we get something more out of them. But again, just always left me kind of wanting that a little bit more. Other guys you had up here, and let's talk about Emmett Johnson. He's a guy that I get what his shtick is, but I just couldn't kind of get over the top with him. Maybe it was just kind of like a little thinner. And I think that kind of sometimes between tackles, he got tripped up. But once you kind of got to see that past the line of scrimmage, I liked him a little bit more and kind of see the appeal. But you like him a little bit, maybe kind of considering, again, more of that kind of, if I'm reading your rankings right, kind of maybe late day two, early day three type of kind of tier. So Johnson, maybe why you have him or what do you think about him?
Yeah, with Emma Johnson, this was one of the bigger breakouts in the country this year. Just, yeah. You know, feasted on his opportunity. Incredibly, incredibly bright guy and hardworking kind of guy. I mean, had a ton of touches, ran for over 1,400 yards, 36 explosives, added 46 catches. So Nebraska put him in a position to just constantly have the ball in his hands. And he thrived as a workhorse back, right? I mean, you know, being able to handle that kind of workload is a skill for the draft. It's not everything for sure, but it's absolutely a skill. He can make you miss with the light feet, the jukes, the spins. We've talked about a lot of backs that just lack creativity. This guy does not fall into that bucket. Incredibly creative runner, stop on a dime, easily reaccelerate, you know, cut one way and once again, kind of spin. He tries to make the most out of everything. 89th percentile in missed tackles forced per reception. They had 46 catches. He forced 20 missed tackles. So like if you got him in any kind of space, half the time he's going to make that initial tackler miss. And that's why they threw him the ball. And then there's a couple of deep throws where he showed he can track the ball, where I was like, oh, that's more receiving level tracking from you right there, where that's going to get you on the field more as well. I agree. The body type this year was definitely different and not what you're accustomed to seeing. And it did limit his power on the field. I do have to say he's put on a lot of muscle since the season ended for the combine. Like that's he looked good. Bigger and strong. I said to him right away, I was like, you look bigger and stronger. And he came to the combine in the sleeveless and he was so excited.
I didn't
excited
think he weighed over 200. So I was actually surprised he weighed over 200. Yeah.
Right.
I thought he was like 190.
He has really, really lived in the weight room and the dieting since this process started. And coaches are going to love him. He's a rare football historian. Like watches nice. Walter Payton, watches the 49ers run game, grew up in inner city Minnesota, like near the Vikings stadium. The Vikings mm-hmm. mean a lot to him. So he's somebody that I think, yes, the film matters so much with him and it's really, really good. But I also think he'll bring intangibles to a running back room that he won't be fazed by. Okay, you're going to start out as the number three or the number two and you're going to have to earn this and we're going to ask this of you to improve. And he's going to absolutely lean all the way into it. So Emmett Johnson, I'd love to see him in some kind of committee backfield. I mean, ironically, and he grew up a fan of them, I'd love to see him in Minnesota, where you have Aaron Jones, and we love Aaron Jones, but Aaron Jones gets hurt every year at this stage. Yep. And, you know, you can, if Aaron Jones gets hurt, you start the year as the number three, and then you work your way into a number two role. So, yeah, third or fourth round, and he'll help a committee backfield for sure.
Yeah, I like him on zone stuff, too. Like, that actually makes a lot of sense. I like Johnson. I have him as, like, a round four guy, but it's one of those where it's, like, he grew on me as I watched him. It was just some of the tripped up stuff, which again, we're just talking about with the weight. But again, like this, that's kind of what this kind of group of running backs is. It's like, there's a lot of guys that maybe don't like that size, maybe missing one or two things. I love the historian stuff. He went to Holy Angels, which is where, Larry Fitzgerald went. And, I'm blanking on the quarterback, Joe Stocko, Wisconsin, Wisconsin legend also went, that was the quarterback that threw to him, but yeah. Yeah, good program, good hockey program as well, Holy Angels. But yeah, no, I'm glad we talked about Johnson. I think we see him similar. Do you have him above like Singleton and Washington?
Now, my latest rankings, I do. I have it love Price and Coleman kind of in the same exact tier. Then Emmett Johnson, ironically, like RB4 is like a third or fourth round player in this draft.
That's okay. This makes me feel better because this is how I mean, this whole draft, even like we'll talk about like, not in this show, but like edges and stuff. Even when I was doing my top 50, there's a lot of guys that you would take in typical drafts from like 40 to 75, but there's like 50 of them, but there's not a lot of like 20 to 40s, if that makes sense. Like there's a lot of these guys, I've given a lot of third round grades And now, so like when I was doing the top 50 in that last like five, six spots in my top 50, I had like 20 candidates for it because it was just like, these guys are all graded the same. So it's like, you ask me a different day, if I'm a different team, I'll take the D tackle, I'll take the edge, I'll take the running back. But there's a lot of third round grades. And then even when you get into the top 100, there's a lot of fourth round grades that are kind of getting bumped up. So we're looking at the same. The last kind of guy, this was maybe my last running back watch, I think, that I have notes on, is Jamari Taylor from Virginia, who got, like, talk about muscle hamster. Compact runner is how I described him. Yep. I said he plays, and I mean this as a compliment, plays with the mindset of a great teams guy, special teams. But I mean, there's a reason this guy had 14 rushing touchdowns. I don't always use raw totals, but there's a reason he got those, because this guy is a short yardage wizard, and just that classic, just real compact, tough runner, great balance, great short yardage. But he's another guy that I saw you had notes on. So Jamari Taylor from Virginia, a transfer from North Carolina Central?
Central, yep.
Yes. But yeah, Taylor, what did you think about him?
Yeah, he nailed it. I mean, the strengths, this is a gritty downhill runner. I like the vision, but what matters is just no fear of dropping his pads, lowering his shoulder through contact, does not skip arm day. He might actually do double arm day, Jamari Taylor. Like, it's funny seeing 5'10", 199, because aesthetically, like, his 199 is much different than somebody else's 199. You see right there. Yeah, big arms, shoulders to run through people. Now, here's the thing I was a little hung up on, Nate, is that I put, like, politely, average size, but his running style is of a power runner. How is that going to translate at the next level?
No second contract.
That's exactly right. It's like, oh, that's car crash over and over again at 199. Yeah. Like, we might get some nice early returns. It's mediocre explosiveness and long speed. Mm-hmm. And I wish there weren't the concentration drops on the swing passes, because I'd love to see him be a little bit more, reliable there. He's not going to create a ton of extra yards, but he falls back into that Honda Civic, maybe even a step lower kind of runner. So he's the day three. Like, we think we can trust this guy. He's going to do some dirty work running for us if we have a guy or two get hurt.
It's kind of what Sean Tucker has become. Sean Tucker is a different animal, but kind of that role and everything, they're built a little kind of the same. But it's, this guy grew on me. Like, I'm very realistic of what he is. This is not a play style and a size for a lot of years, but it's a one that wins you over. So that's why I say he has the mindset of a great teams guy, which is, if you ever met a wedge buster, which don't exist anymore, that a wedge buster, he plays with the mindset of a wedge buster on kickoff. And those don't exist anymore.
Special level lunatic.
Yes. And I'm going to love it. And it's like, I know what the value of that is. Like, that's maybe round five. But just a guy that won me over with his play style. Maybe last couple guys, or if there's any other day three guys, but these are three that have kind of caught my attention. Damon Claiborne from Wake Forest.
I was hoping Roman you'd go there.
From Indiana. Okay, Roman Hemby from Indiana, I'm a sucker for. And then actually, you mentioned him a little bit, Adam Randall from Clemson. These are three guys that have kind of caught my attention. But any of these three guys that maybe you want to take a chomp at, or if there's another one you want to throw in here as we wrap up running backs.
Claiborne was the biggest riser when I got to him. I have him at RB8 in this class now, because, man, he's going to be an enigma. There's no way around it. 188, 4.3 wheels. He can absolutely fly. He's twitched up. Mm. I mean, we're talking video game level juke moves. If you take a wrong angle, you're in big trouble. There's not much recovering against this guy. He can be shot out of a cannon. He's going to beat you to the corner with the foot race, the stop and start. It, like, all of that is there. He returned a kick for a touchdown in both 2023 and 2024. But why I say he's an enigma, he's undersized. He's 188 pounds. Mm. And he doesn't really offer, in my opinion, a lot of third down ability. I don't think he's a... It's weird because he looked good catching the ball on the Shrine tape that I watched. But watching him play in the pass game for Wake this year... It was... First off, you got short arms. It's not natural. the adjustments are not, there's a limited radius, short area drops. And then the biggest disappointment besides that, because I think he's got to play in the pass game if he's going to be on an NFL roster. He's got to figure that out. He didn't fumble in 2024 at all. Never fumbled. He fumbled four times this year. What happened? It's like, this was something that was going to help you a lot. You're a smaller guy, a big play, change of pace guy. You take care of the ball. And then 2025, all of a sudden, you were the exact opposite. That's wide variance. A guy not fumbling and then fumbling twice, it happens. It's the league. Guys punch the ball out. Four times is a pretty jarring jump. So, man, I am very interested in this guy because he's got some juice that running backs in this class don't have. But I can also see an NFL coaching staff. This happened with, who did the Cowboys take on day three last year from Texas?
Jaden Blue.
Jaden Blue had really, really small hands and a huge fumbling problem. But his best plays were like, oh, man, I'm excited. I'm seated for this. I'm excited for this. And then the coaches never, ever wanted to put him on the field, which it was like, I'm not surprised. Ever. Claiborne, I like better than Jaden Blue, quite a bit better. But I have those little fears of like, he's going to go. He's going to be a third running back on a roster. Everybody in fantasy can't wait to see him on the field. And the coaching staff is hesitant to put him on the field.
And then you get really frustrated why he's the number three and is getting five snaps a game and is just on special teams. Yeah, that I liked him a little bit more on film than maybe I thought. Like, I actually thought running between the tackles, he was a little bit better than I was expecting.
Yes.
Very herky jerky run style, very like stop start, just very just like, you know, it's like he's having a stroke, but it's like just the speed is incredible. I mean, the fast, not only just 40 time, he hit 23.71 miles an hour top speed on the 40. I know that's no pads and everything. That's still 23.7 miles an hour. That is ridiculous. Blistering fast. And yeah, kick returnability is going to help, but it's just like, what my biggest negative was, hands are just okay. And they can't be just okay. They have to be good. And small for protection. Even if he had want to, that would still be an issue for me. And I don't know. I think he's iffy on it. And I said at tops, he's your number two, but that's only if your number one can handle pass protection. So really he's a number three, a high end number three, but he has to get better in protection and receiving to have value. You can't just be a luxury player as a running back three. Like it's just too, like, that's not how rosters are built. And if you are a luxury three, you are a special teams ace, special teams demon. You are LaQuint Allen for the Jacks, who is incredible in pass protection and incredible in special teams. That's a number three, ideally. I'm all over the place with him. I see the highlights. I thought his vision was actually a little bit better than I was expecting, but his size and just that lack of the auxiliary stuff has me worried. He plays like a guy that ran track and didn't play basketball or baseball. Like that's at recess, he just outran everybody. He didn't play catch at recess. He just raced at recess. That's what it seems like to me. Sometimes fast guys are like this, where they just don't know how to like quite properly catch all the time. And I've noticed that over the years.
The necessities. I remember when the school of scouting I came from, one of the first things somebody much smarter than me taught me was like, base point with running backs, just filter out. You need to check two or three. You need to be a good runner, a good pass catcher, and good pass protector. You have to have two or three, and we're not drafting you. You added the special teams as like that. It's like almost like a 3B, which is so important. Yep. You're right. You could do one of the three, but you need to be elite at special teams. Yes. And Claiborne, who I like, he just has one of the three right now where teams going by that old school nature would be like, we can't put him on the roster. And it's such a difficult thing to cipher through.
It is. And if anyone's seen my big boards, it's really just stuff I've learned and stuff. But like even a guy like receiver wise, if they're slot only, I'm going to have them lower because it's roles you can play and snaps you can play. It's how the values. If you're a tight end, which we're about to talk about, but you can't play in line, you're going to be lower unless you're an absolute monster as a receiver.
Dude, I'm so glad you said that. It's one of the biggest changes in my process, almost like a grumpy old man. I value the inline stuff more than I ever have at the point where, like when we did our early tight end rankings, and this isn't to toot my own horn because I'm wrong on a ton of different stuff, but I was watching Sam Roush and Eli Raritan. And I'm like, Why does no one care about them at all? Nobody cares about them at all. And then, you know, fortunately, Roush tested really well then now that everybody cares about him. But it's a little fantasy brain aspect. And I say this as someone who does fantasy content for NBC. Mm-hmm. Tight end in fantasy is so wildly different from what matters in the league. And I think mm-hmm. that has trickled into scouting with the move tight ends versus guys that can actually be parked next to a tackle.
Yes. Yes. In line of doing shows with Matt Harmon, and we do film rooms, and like, you know, sometimes I'm scraping the barrel. They're like, who's some guy you want to talk about? And this was the AJ Barnard discussion last year. Mm. And I was like, I know his production isn't there, but he's on the field, and it's going to trigger, right. Like he's going to start getting the stats that are going to back up because he can stay on the field. And that's what coaches value. That's why Josh Oliver gets paid. Even teams want to go 2 tight ends, 3 tight ends. That's why I always say it's the inline guys, the guy you need to do that, not the receiving guys. It's kind of backwards than I think some people think. So yeah, tight ends, but running backs has that as well. Can you pass protect? And like Jahmyr Gibbs is like one of the guys that was weak in pass protection. He got better now as a pro, but he was such an overwhelming athlete that you're willing to wave away, you know, the pass protection stuff. But same kind of thing where it's just snaps impacted. I'll round this out because I know I never go short in any subject ever. Roman Hemby from Indiana. I have to talk about this guy because this is, again, one of my types of backs. Just do it all guy. Great in pass protection. Talking about all that. Not an overwhelming athlete, but I'd say probably my favorite day three guy because he's just the ideal number two. He can run short yardage, he can catch, he can pass protect, not overwhelming as an athlete, but he cuts, he gets downhill, so I can see a zone team liking him. He's a guy that just, I know he's had a split backfield with Kalon Black, but Hemby is just a guy that just like, I don't know, every time the ball went in his hands, something good happened. Like he's just an efficient player. So he's like kind of one of my more favorite day three guys. And then Adam Randall from Clemson, the converted receiver. Actually liked his film a little bit better at the end of the year when Clemson was kind of a ghost team. But his top speed was interesting. His top speed was interesting in the 40 for tracking. So he only ran a 4.5, but he ran a 4.5. He had a 22.82 top speed. That's faster than Zachariah Branch, who ran a 4.35, faster than Jeff Caldwell, who ran a 4.31, faster than Bryce Lance, who I really like, who ran a 4.34. So there's something, his time speed isn't as fast as his play speed, I think. I think he's got a little more juice and actually was a decent runner. Again, as kind of an interesting day three guy. Like he actually kind of piqued my interest. Obviously, his former receiver background showed up when they would split him out and actually kind of like that stuff. But so those are the last kind of guys I wanted to mention in there. If I don't know if you had thoughts on those guys or maybe one more in there.
Yeah, no, I'm Hemby number one, like a total representation of that program, right? They just play winning football and they do whatever's needed to be asked of them. It's you run into that when you're scouting all of the Indiana guys. So I'm with you on him as a day three kind of add. Randall's going to be fascinating because it's almost like his lack of experience, the position is going to help his draft stock because coaches are going to believe in his shortcomings right now. Because he's big, you brought up the explosiveness and the overall speed. He's got this big body. He's comfortable with a bigger route tree. It's just he needs to bring more force and pass protection. It's like you're big, and I know you're strong. Like hit somebody. So that's something
play
that
like you're big and strong.
Yes, I know it's there. And that same could be said. You know, run a little bit more violent consistently.
Yeah.
So I think Randall's lack of experience the position will actually get him drafted earlier than that typical kind of player would go.
Yeah. I'm a sucker for these guys. The Tyrone Tracy's, the David Johnson's, the Rashad White's. Like these guys, I'm just like the coaches that just go, well, we haven't tapped into what he's actually right now, but it's also like, if you were a good running back, you would have been a good running back in sixth grade. you would have been playing that. If like, there's some truth in narrative scouting with this stuff. But yeah, he's interesting. He's 6'3", 232. He's just huge and he tested well. He piqued my interest where the film actually was okay. But that's it for running backs. That was awesome. We're going to take a quick break and we'll come back with tight ends, which kind of a similar discussion. Guy up top, and then just a whole lot of interesting day two and day three. We'll be back in one sec. All right, we are back. Let's get to tight ends. Similar discussion. Kenyon Sadiq won essentially with a bullet. Not a perfect tight end, but a very intriguing one, a very athletic one, and one I like when it comes down to it. But Connor, I know I spoke for you with your tight end one. Who are some other names, though, you're looking at as kind of this glut of prospects. But there's a lot of guys I like in this class. If I just want to do my shorthand version, but me stacking them up, this is going to take me until the week before the draft to figure out how I'm going to stack these guys up. So I'm curious if you kind of have gone through the same process.
I have, going back to summer. When I started this group last summer, it was kind of like, okay, and then you added a ton more in this year, and I find myself moving them around all the time. You know, I have Sadiq at the top like you. That's not the surprise. Sam Roush from Stanford. If you're a team that plays plenty of 12 and you have an extra third or fourth round pick this year, like, just take one of these guys and see what happens. Yeah, you absolutely should accumulate that kind of capital to this position. You start with Roush, who had the big combine. He's someone that he's got the big body. Over the last 2 years, he's played over 1,000 snaps in line. So unlike a lot of college tight ends that are productive, he actually, in my opinion, is playing the position like a pro right now. I love how he rumbles after the catch. I mean, 6.5 yards after catch per reception. That was 70th percentile at this position. You wouldn't think of that for this inline blocking type. And I know he's got the short arms, but high effort, active hands, like, he makes the most of that. You know, this is someone too that he was playing rugby before he was allowed to play football. So it's not like he's been playing football his entire life right here. And I think he's still getting better. Would like to see the drop rate go down. Would like to see him work on sustaining those blocks a little longer. But I like Sam Roush quite a bit, Nate, because I just love that I could put him on the line of scrimmage, and I think he's tough as hell.
Yeah, it's not a perfect one-to-one comparison, but maybe as a pro role, there's some Kate Otten to him, where I think Roush might be a little stronger, but where it's more as far as just everything he can do, like where he does everything well. Maybe not overwhelming in any area, but actually can be valid in line. I liked him. He tested actually way better than I was expecting. Not to say that he was slow or a plotter or anything, but I was like, oh, wow, that's, hey, some of my basic tight end scouting, what the too long didn't read is draft the biggest, longest athletes and hope they figure it out. like when it comes down, when you get outside the top guys, that's kind of what you're getting to when you get to round three, round four. And I wish he had the length, because sometimes as a blocker, he's got great pop. You can see the explosiveness. He's always going to the right guy, just falls off. You know, guys that are longer, you know, he's trying to sustain, that's where you can see the long, you know, and sometimes when he's a route runner, some press, and you know, maybe a longer safety can give him issues, like getting off of that, or getting off kind of maybe contact as a route runner. But just having said all that, there's strength and pop as a blocker, and you can just use him. Like, there's a role for him somewhere in this league, and that's kind of how I kind of ended up on him. Another guy that, like you said, there's like, I'll give my quick thoughts on Sadiq. Fast, quick, explosive, has some concentration drops. Gritty blocker, though, or willing blocker, even if I think he's maxed out size-wise. I think he is completely just capped out as an athlete. So it is what it is. Like 241, he probably can get to 243. But I don't think there's much room to grow here. I've compared him. He's somewhere on this spectrum in between Tommy Tremble and Vernon Davis. He's somewhere in that archetype it's a move guy. It's a good player. That Tremble is a good blocker. He's just not very, you know, big or long or ideal, but he's willing to pop, and it's got that explosiveness for the Panthers. He went in round three, I believe. And then Vernon Davis was a top 10 guy. They tested very similar, but Vernon was about 10 pounds heavier. But same kind of, Vernon had concentration drops. Vernon sometimes wasn't great on route breaks. He was better on move routes and vertical routes. And I feel the same way with Sadiq, where it's kind of like he has to be on crossing routes or something, maybe taking the top off down the seam. Maybe just, you know, kind of check the box of our Sadiq discussion. Really, really like him. I think I had him in my top 15. He's going to be somewhere in the mid-teens for me on my big board. But kind of maybe you're too long didn't read on Kenyon Sadiq.
Yeah, he's player 14 on my big board. So I'm buying into the athlete and the toughness, where, you know, you don't have to be 260, but you got to show it on tape that it's part of your game. And they put him in the backfield to lead block. They get him moving out front on the perimeter. He's such a special athlete that, you know, once again, like, if he's buying into that and he takes a lot of pride in it, and you brought it up too, his ability to get over the top of a linebacker and really put pressure on the back end of a defense for a tight end. You could throw him a screen. He's kind of, you know, pretty exciting to watch with the ball in his hands, where I think there's going to be a little bit more creativity for him at the next level. Sadiq is a very, very unique player. I mean, when we're bringing up Tremble and Vernon Davis, that just goes to show you the interesting kind of bucket he's in, where landing spot will matter a lot, but the right team will take him and know what to do.
Yeah. Oh, I know. I don't know if they'll do it, but like the Rams are ideal, like where they use him as a power slot move guy. Yeah, amazing. It's perfect. They got the perfect setup for him. Like those. Yeah, but a Shanahan team, I think, would use him best. Even like the Vikings would use him well, I think. Like those types of teams would just use him. And then I'm just thinking in that draft range too, where it's like, yeah, okay, maybe not in line. He's on the backside of in line, but he's more dynamic to me than Dalton Kincaid. You know, or just as a little, Kincaid's such a smooth athlete, while I think Sadiq is explosive. Like there's just a little differences of that. But at worst, I think you can use him in that role. And I think he's way grittier of a blocker and has a little bit more to him. So it's like, yeah, I don't know. There's some sweet spots for him that I like a lot more. He's not perfect for everybody, but man, it's easy to talk yourselves into him. I understand the qualms with him, but it's just like, man, there's just so much you can do with him. And that's what scouting's all about. It's like, what can they do? You know, he can do a lot. Any other day two guys? You mentioned Roush, who also has a great picture, like a Hanson brother. I meant to mention that as well, but any other kind of maybe day two tight end? Cause you have Roush maybe as like a round three guy.
Round three ish, I would say.
Yeah.
The next
like sneaks
guy
into your top 100 kind of thing, like that kind of range. Definitely. Like that's how I'm viewing a lot of these guys. That not quite top 50 players, but a lot from 51 to 100. I'm gonna have quite a few of these tight ends we're about to talk about. But any of those guys in that range.
One that's tricky to project is Eli Raritan. Because
I'm in.
Like, let me just say that. I will have him. I'm assuming he'll be ranked higher for me than where he goes, because he tore his right ACL twice in a 10-month span. It was right before he got to Notre Dame and then 5 games into his college career. Now, he's played really good football after that in 2 different roles. You watch him in 2024. It felt like he was kind of used differently than 2025, where he's handled heavy blocking roles. He's also been a big time receiver for them. He could really eat up zone, high IQ, knows how to attack zone coverages. I think he's got the builds that you just ask for at this position. He isn't the heaviest kind of guy, but he's super tall. The yards per route run, I mean, in 2025 was 90th percentile, highly efficient receiving tight end. The strides just cover so much turf. He climbs over linebackers. He's got good change of direction at that size too, where this is a pretty damn good athlete. He's obviously tested like a really good athlete, and massive, massive hands. He's got 719 snaps on the line of scrimmage over the last 2 seasons. So he's played on the line of scrimmage. He's been asked to block a lot. I'm not going to pretend to be the doctor here and talk about the longevity, but Raritan, he was my tight end 2 on my early rankings. He's now still my tight end 3, only behind Sadiq and Roush.
And Roush, okay. He's battling for 2 for me. He's just grown on me. I was aware of him because I was watching Evans last year. And then, like you said, it's a different role this year. And it was nice because that was more off ball, if I remember. I really like Evans too, by the way, Mitchell Evans, who's with the Panthers now. 2 Panthers tight ends references. Tommy Tremble and Mitchell Evans.
A lot
Evans.
Of ACL but, talk too.
Maybe something going on in South Bend. But Raritan, man, he tested great. He's got length. He's got almost 33-inch arms. Like you said, huge hands. So he's thick. And he tested well. Like explosive, got real strength, even with the longer arms. He has actual every down inline ability, but enough athleticism to attack the seam. Good hands. I really, the biggest note I had on was how well he can adjust for the football and good strength. And not saying he's like, oh my God, George Kittle every play as a blocker, but their flashes are there and the want to's there. And it's one of those where at 6'6", 245 with those long arms, I can easily project him to gain 7 to 10 pounds. Like that's just kind of the math you can easily do with this. And so I really like him. He's battling for TE2 for me. I view him as you know, he didn't make my top 50, but kind of that next tier of guys that maybe just make it. Like I said, I have a whole group of guys with round three grades. That's how I look at Raritan. These are the guys that make it. Like, again, biggest, longest athletes, but he has enough real football that's like, this guy's not a project. It's like, he just flashes a receiver, flashes as a blocker, has the want to, has the smarts, can kind of check all the boxes of a modern tight end. Like you said, actually can make some guys miss, which is such a more important ability with all these checkdowns that are happening with the, you know, defenses are daring checkdowns to happen and daring a tight end to get 8 yards on a checkdown. If you can get it, that's a weapon. So yeah, he's been really battling for me. So I'm kind of glad to hear that you like him as well. I haven't really gotten to talk about him much.
He's built like a guy that just got paid in Charlie Kohler. Very, very similar build.
Yeah, they are just like, actually, what are Kohler's? Yeah, that's a football 301 favorite. I'm glad he actually got paid because I hyped him up for about 2 weeks.
252. He's got a little longer arms. They got the big hands. Yeah, they have very similar builds.
And he went round four. And yeah, I mean, and what class was that? So in 2022. Okay, so yeah, no, I think. Yeah, that's a great comparison. And that's the type of role. And I think he's got a little bit more juice as a receiver. And, you know, Kohler hasn't really gotten to show that because of who else there is there. No, that's a great comparison. Or Cole Kmet, actually, was another one. Right. You know, kind of that another Notre Dame guy. All right. So other tight ends maybe that you look at in this tier, kind of that top 50, top 52 to top 100-ish kind of tier.
Yeah, this is where you get into Max Kohler. I liked so much this summer. And it just didn't happen at Ohio State for whatever reasons, which is tricky. You know, you watch him over the summer.
Classic
at Purdue.
Tale of the disappointing to Ohio State tight end. This is version like 15 every year. I'm like, just wait, next year this guy's gonna peak, and then they just plateau every single time.
I thought this was the one. Watching him at Purdue, I was like, do we have our next Sam Laporta kind of player? When you look at the build, you look at the routes, quickness. You know, once again, a good understanding of how to attack coverages. Super seamless in terms of transitioning from catching the ball to being a runner with the ball. He's not a big guy at the position. I didn't think he was this overly effective drive blocking kind of guy at that size. That's not shocking. The long speed, mediocre on tape, could clean up some drops. But, you know, it's just one of those ones where it's like, man, I was really disappointed with the lack of production at that program after he looked like a star for Purdue. So is an NFL team going to get more out of him with a top 100 pick, or is this more of the same?
I think you summed it up great. A fluid athlete, and I even put it as more fluid than fast. That makes sense. Like he's bendy and can make a guy miss, make the first tackler miss smooth, but just not powerful as a player. And even if he like doesn't have the great length, he can adjust well. But just like as a blocker, not bad in space. He's very aware of his assignments, but just not going to move guys. Going to be receiving only type, I think. Maybe, you know, maybe can touch in as a blocker a little bit more. But yeah, I wanted to like him more because I was right there with you. He was probably my summer tight end too, unofficially. Because I only watched like three or four tight ends going into the year, I think. And I kind of just didn't see that next step. So yeah, he kind of underwhelmed me but I still liked him. But he'll end up kind of more of a, if I were to do a top 100, more the bottom of that top 100 as opposed to the top of that, you know, or past the mid tier or something like that. I kind of have them a little bit below because I just don't see that inline ability. There's a lot of good, like interesting receiving tight ends. Justin Jolie from NC State, Daquan Wright from Ole Miss, Eli Stowers from Vanderbilt. Any of these guys that maybe you want to touch on, Michael Trigg from Baylor, any of these kind of maybe, I view them more as day three-ish. Maybe sneak into that kind of maybe early or late round or day two-ish, but any of these guys you maybe want to touch on?
Well, I think Stowers is getting attention because of the borderline historic workout. I haven't moved him a ton since then because
I don't think he's landed from his vert. I think he's still up in the air.
That made some noise. You know, kind of the Jonnu Smith necessary role for this player. Yeah. Not typically the player I gravitate towards at this position, but I understand why there will be a lot of hype. I don't have him in my top five tight ends right now, which is why I kind of want to transition. The guy I'm interested in, you brought him up in Daquan Wright. Daquan Wright, doesn't get a lot of attention. He's got good size. He's a good athlete. You know, 27 of his 36 catches this year went for a first down. If you want to lean into analytics with him, there's a lot to like there. 87th percentile separation percentage, 81st percentile yards per route run, 99th percentile yards after catch per reception. So when they threw him the ball,
that's what stands out about him.
Right, I mean, there. A moose in the open field where it's like, ah, I don't really want to have to tackle this guy. And oh, he's fast in the open field now, too. So, and you know what? This is where grading can get a little funky when you look at blocking grades by any system. Daquan Wright being asked to block defensive ends should not be graded the same way an F tight end blocks a 180 pound corner. That should not be quantified with the same number. So Daquan Wright, I thought, was an adequate blocker for the position considering his assignments.
Yeah, I'm with you. I liked him a lot more than I thought I would. He's a bit stiff hipped, but he, you know what? He can roll. He's got explosiveness. He's got good pop as a blocker. Lacks great technique, but it's not bad. I actually thought he had some, you know, good length and size. I think he can be okay in that area. They used him a little bit like how the Packers used to use JerMichael Finley, where they'd have him fold block and lead up. And I don't know if that's a perfect comparison as a player, but yeah, they'd use him a lot like that a little bit. I said he almost has a little bit, almost like a Diet Coke Jared Cook, where he's long legged,
see that,
and stiff hipped. Where so it's like you don't want him turning on routes, but crossing routes, vert routes, stuff that gets him rolling a little bit. You almost use him like Quentin Johnston at tight end, just gets him really rolling a little bit. That was the kind of movement comparison a little bit. I liked him a lot too. I'm glad you brought him up. I'm being realistic of where I grade him, but of this kind of, there's a lot of this types, like just an imperfect receiver type tight ends. But his stuff is real to me. Like Ole Miss's offense can be a little gimmicky, but his stuff felt more real and translatable, where I just think he can just do a little bit more at the next level. I'm not going to ask him to run Antonio Gates routes, but as an auxiliary target that can create a little bit, and you can use him as a third down blocker, use him as an off ball blocker. I kind of like that.
Right.
And also just, I like watching Ole Miss because I like watching Trinidad Chambliss. So that also helps too.
They were an aesthetically pleasing offense to watch for their prospects this year, for sure.
Yes, they were.
Once again, like you get this guy with some momentum to run through people. Yeah, I just found myself higher on him than a lot of the popular names like Stowers and Jolie. Jolie's an interesting one because he's a contested catch king. He's got massive hands where it all makes sense. I don't know how fast he actually is, even though he generates separation.
Yeah.
Right? Like that was kind of.
I'm glad you said that. You know where I see it is when he breaks on routes because he has really loose route breaks and he can't, like, he doesn't burst out of his breaks. I know that sounds so niche, but like that's where I'm agreeing with you is he's an oozer. Is kind of the way I put it. Like there's not that suddenness to any of his movements. Yeah.
Yeah. That's a really good way to put it. I mean, he converts contests. He's got great ball skills. He maximizes his catch radius. He's ran the seam plenty of times. I think his most underrated skill set is when the play breaks down, he's excellent on the scramble drill. He had a sixth sense to follow the trackway with his quarterback. He's a big red zone threat. He did play more snaps in line in 2025 than at the slot. So I think a lot of that, it's kind of the classic, like, slot clogging F tight end. No, he's trying, at least. He really is trying to become a better blocker and a bigger player. And I know he's gained a lot of weight throughout his college career. So, yeah, you know, not creative with the ball in his hands. Little concerning that I kind of found him as a non-factor against Notre Dame and Miami this year. Because it's, you know, you look at some of these schedules and it's like, I like you a lot, but man, there's a lot of NFL players on both of those defenses. And it's not in your fault entirely that you disappeared, but you always get a little scared when that pops up as well.
When you're watching Harold Fan, I know NC State is way better than Bowling Green or a bigger school, but you watch Harold Fannin play Texas A&M and Penn State, it was like, oh, this guy looks like the NFL tight end. And like, you know, he's just like, he just is running over everybody, like running past people. Right. It's like, yeah, it's not perfect, but I could see the difference of athlete. And if you're going to be a receiving tight end, you have to have a difference as an athlete. Like if you're only going to be that, you better be a plus in those areas. I kind of cooled on him as I watched him because I said he's still more of an athlete than a true tight end. But that's the thing. If you're going to be an athlete, not a true kind of technician in any area, well, you better be overwhelming that area. And I just kind of just don't see that with him as much. And like, actually, I kind of have Wright a little bit more, or liked him a little bit more.
Me too. I have to throw back to, you brought up, you know, Fannin looking the part against a big program. My favorite one of all time is Khalil Mack against Ohio State. He had like 2.5 sacks.
3 sacks, 2 forced fumbles.
Oh. I think a pick six, or he had something like, it was just one of those games where like it's like, who is this monster on UB out here clowning Ohio State? That's one of my favorite ones of all time.
Yeah, I think that was, I think Taylor Decker was the tackle he just abused in that game too.
Makes it that much better.
I could be wrong, but I remember it being a legit tight or tackle that he went against. All right, I know you got to get out of here soon, but there's one tight end I have to ask you. I saw him on your list, Carson Ryan from BYU. And I did watch this guy, old number 20, let's change that number at the NFL level. Did not get a combine invite, but was super productive last year, a transfer from UCLA and Utah. And I liked him when I watched him, but I was curious about him because I saw that you maybe had some notes on him.
Yeah, I was kind of floored. Maybe they hated the number as much as you for the combine list. I mean, no combine invite for this guy. And I get it. Not a crazy average depth of targets, a lot of underneath stuff, mediocre long speed, but this is still a former four-star recruit that just had 629 yards this year, 93rd percentile separation percentage, 85th percentile yards per route run. It was a breakout season, high effort in line and on the move. You brought up Daquan Wright kind of striking with force. That's what Carson Ryan does as well. And he's average size, but he'll drive his legs, can plow through defenders after the catch. I don't know. This one doesn't make sense to me that he didn't get a combine invite. I think he's better than a couple of guys that did, and definitely one of those non-combine guys that needs to be drafted this year.
Yeah, and being realistic again, but like, man, I ended up with like a fourth round grade on him. I liked him a lot. I thought he had good size and was just not the most explosive guy, but like it was really easy getting in and out of breaks. Like he had good hips and just good body control. And these kind of type of guys just make it where they just have, like, I think the ultimate example of this is Trey McBride, where it's like he's maybe not the fastest guy. He's good speed, don't get me wrong. But watch Trey McBride get in and out of breaks. Watch him adjust for the football. It's like a different type of athleticism. It's body control. And like Ryan has that. And I think I saw him weigh at 259. He's got short arms. But I don't know. I really liked him more than I thought I would. And I know I saw him on your short list, and he's just a guy that for a non-combine invite, then there's just another part of these tight ends. Him and Riley Nowakowski from Indiana, who are 37, which was also yucky. He's more of like a fullback move guy, but I actually liked him as a former Badger. Last guy before you get out of here. Okay, well, there's Michael Trigg from Baylor. Kind of liked him, long arms. Will be older, has enough speed, create vertically. Has good contact balance, but again, have to be realistic as an older guy, maybe lacks some size. Oscar Delp, I actually liked him as flashes of inline ability, flashes as a receiver. I think he's a better athlete and a better route runner than his production points to, can get vertical. Just doesn't have that super, I want him to be in line, but he doesn't have that great length. And maybe doesn't have that overwhelming pop, but I do like him again as more of that late third, early fourth round type. But the last guy I wanted to pepper to you, unless those guys grab your attention, Marlon Klein from Michigan, the German, moved to America, only made about a dozen college starts, good size, willing blocker, terrible technique, but a willing blocker and strong because he can bend, but he clamps. His arms are always outside. But if we can improve that, and there's some narrative here where he's a German, it can maybe grow to this, but good burst. I was wondering if you had thoughts on Klein or maybe one more of these guys, Delp, Trigg, any of these guys.
Klein, definitely that developmental kind of guy, like you said, the German prospect and straight line. He can run, like he could really build up that kind of speed. And you nailed it. Willing. He's total draft and stash kind of player. I was a little disappointed, and maybe there was an injury or something we didn't know. He was like top of my list of one of the guys I want to see for the Senior Bowl. And then he dropped out, or I'm not really sure what happened there. I was like, I'd love to see him in that environment because, you know, he's had a little extra time and he's going to go up to some better players, although he obviously played against good players. But it's a different environment for developmental guys. So he is super, super interesting. Trigg is the guy that he's got like the highlight tape that everybody will just go nuts. He makes some of the craziest catches. Inspector Gadget arms. He had basketball offers.
I didn't even have to see his measurements. I was like, this guy has like 34-inch arms. I could just tell by just watching.
He does. They absolutely just pop on tape. 34 and a quarter, which is out of this world. His wingspan is 99th percentile. You could see why he had multiple basketball offers coming out of high school. You know, I just wish there was a little bit more there as a blocker that I could put him on the field at a higher rate. And then he did have a high drop rate where it's like the highs are so incredibly impressive, but the consistencies as a receiver would concern me a little bit. But jump ball specialist, he can make just once again some of the craziest plays you'll ever see. So, yeah, I'm fascinated to see how teams value Trigg.
And the age stuff too, which in tight ends is a little different. There's a theory about, you know, long arm guys can have drop issues because they don't know how to contort their hands towards their body. So they don't know if it throws at their body. They don't know whether they go out and stretch out or when it come in and that's go under. And something long arm guys can have issues with. Yeah, it's something I've kind of noticed over the years. But he is the perfect example of that, where he catches balls away from his body better than he catches balls thrown at him. Yeah. And some guys with long arms that can just always be an issue. It's just a physics thing. Yeah. But I've always kind of noticed that. But Connor, this was awesome. Thank you so much for joining me for today. This was a blast. I know it was good. Getting the juices flowing, really diving deep into these guys. Connor, it kills it over at everything he does. You can check him out at Connor J. Rogers on social media. Check him out on the NFL Stock Exchange. Check him out on NBC. Everything he does. Anything you're working on right now or this week that you want to highlight before you get out of here?
I will have a big board up on NBC. I don't even know the last time I did one. So it feels kind of like,
you kind of do an unofficial one, right? Like usually like before the draft.
Yeah. I always do one coming out of summer and then move the rankings around all year. But when you release one, it's like, oh boy, like this is on the internet forever. So got to feel good about all of this.
Terrifying.
So that'll be up there. Nate, I'm a huge fan of your work, man. So I love catching up with you on all this stuff. You and I could probably do like 12 hours per position group, which is just absolutely ridiculous. So credit to us for consolidating and condensing it just a little bit today. Thank you so much for having me on.
Don't worry, I blew by your heart out about 10 minutes ago. So, Connor, thank you so much, dude. Thank you for jumping in. I'm so glad that you're able to, like, I knew you would want to talk about some of these day three guys as well. Maybe plant some mini flags as well, as I like to call it. I'm a huge fan of what you do, you and Trevor do, everything, all the 14 different stops, Unbuttoned, all that stuff that you do. So, no, Connor, huge fan of your work. And thank you so much for joining me. This was a ton of fun. Also, thanks to Stone, Austin Madison, behind the scenes for making us look and sound good. We're closing it out today. I'll be back on Thursday with some more prospect breakdowns, probably some more news because the league does not stop. Thank you all for listening. See you guys next time.